श्री अद्वैत गदाधर श्री वासुदेव गौर भक्तवृंद की
जय।
श्री श्री राधा कृष्ण गोप गोपीनाथ श्याम कुंद राधा कुंद गिरि गोपधन की
जय।
श्री वृंदावन धाम की
जय।
श्री नवद्वीप मायापुर धाम की
जय।
श्री जगन्नाथ पुरी धाम की
जय।
गंगमयी की
जय।
यमुनामयी की
जय।
भक्ति देवी की
जय।
तुलसी देवी की
जय।
समवेद भक्त वृंद की
जय।
गौर प्रेमानंदी Personality of Godhead, the Absolute Truth Himself, directly appeared with His expansion and expansions of expansion. Their holy names were Ram, Lakshman, Bharat, and Shatrughna. These celebrated incarnations thus appeared in four forms as the sons of Maharaj Dasarath, performed by His Divine Grace. Lord Ramchandra and his brothers, Lakshman, Bharat, and Shatrughna, are all Vishnu Tattva, not Jiva Tattva. The Supreme Personality of Godhead expands into many, many forms. Adoitam Achyutam Anadim Ananta Rupam. Although they are one and the same, Vishnu Tattva has many forms and incarnations. As confirmed in the Brahma Samhita, Ramadi Murti Shukala Niyamena Tishtan, the Lord is situated in many forms, such as Ram, Lakshman, Bharat, and Shatrughna. And these forms may exist in any part of His creation. All these forms exist permanently, eternally, as individual personalities of Godhead, and they resemble many candles, all equally powerful. Lord Ramchandra, Lakshman, Bharat, and Shatrughna, who, being Vishnu Tattva, are all equally powerful, became the sons of Maharaj Dasarath in response to the prayers by the demigods.
Om Abhyam. Chose this day to install Krishna Balaram in Vrindavan, in his eternal home. In today's purport, Srila Prabhupada is very beautifully explaining how the Lord appears in many ways, in many forms, within his creation. Yada yada hi dharmasya pranir bhavatar abhyutanama dharmasya tadatmanam srijanyam. Krishna tells in the Gita how again and again and again he appears within this world. Out of compassion. This material existence is a place for people who have by their own free will chosen to exploit the resources of the Lord rather than utilizing them in the loving service of the Lord. But he has created this material existence to give us that opportunity But out of his causeless mercy, he's made all the manifestations of this world temporary. Which means inherently, we cannot possibly be happy. Because the soul is eternal. For the soul, there is no death, there is no birth. The soul is mamaivam so jiva loke, jiva bhutasana. It's part of Krishna. By Krishna's own extraordinary, inconceivable, infinite love, he has created us as his parts and parcels, especially so that we can enjoy unlimited bliss in loving relationship with him and through him with each other. All that's required is we just recognize that if he's satisfied, then we can taste the infinite sweetness of his beauty, his sweetness, and his love, and be happy forever. So in material existence, we are trying to take God's property and enjoy separately. But by his mercy, everything here is temporary. Therefore, the eternal soul looking for eternal happiness can never find quantity or quality of happiness for a duration of time. No pleasure in this world gives any satisfaction to the soul if it is separating from our natural love for Krishna. And yet the Lord, so kind, descends into this world from the beginning of the creation, again and again and again, just to remind us, to invite us back home, back to Godhead. This is who you are. This is who I am. Let us enjoy together. As lover and beloved. As master and servant. As friend and friend. Krishna's even willing to become your child to facilitate that love. Here it explains so beautifully something that really crushes into powder the common misconception that when the Supreme Personality of Godhead takes form, Bhagavan, within this world, material world, he assumes a form. He assumes a form in the modes of pure goodness, transcendental to passion or ignorance, even the material mode of goodness in that sense. And invites us back into the liberated condition. And when his lila is done, then his form is done. Just a temporary manifestation. Here, Srila Prabhupada is explaining on the power of the scriptures and the power of the words of the great acharyas that all these forms of Krishna that he appears in his incarnations are eternal. They are ever existing in the spiritual realm beyond material existence, beyond the moments of material. Within the Brahma Jyoti, the infinite light of Lord, the Lord's apparently impersonal form that is all-pervading, are infinite spiritual planets called Vaikuntha, the place where there's no anxiety, where there's no birth, no death, there's no suffering, there's only lila, pastimes of love. That is the spiritual world. And within those various, like the planets, the Lord is residing in these various forms forever. And according to the love we have for Krishna, when our heart becomes pure, we are elevated to that particular abode. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu taught us this in very beautiful ways. When the Lord wants to teach us a lesson, he could make it so dramatic. These devotees. Like we read Bhakti Vinod Thakur, it's in Chaitanya Shikshamrita, he talks about the different demons that come to Vrindavan and how they represent anartas that we have to overcome. So when Krishna wants to show you an anarta, he speaks it philosophically in the Gita. But then when he wants the demonstration, he sends Agasura. Yes, this anarta of harshness toward others that we have to give up. Okay, that's something that he's showing. That's Agasura living in your heart. Gigantic serpent ready to swallow everything. Krishna really knows how to give lessons in a dramatic way. Yes? When he wanted to teach through Prahlad Maharaj how to be patient and forgiving, he didn't just get insulted, he got thrown into blazing fire and pits of venomous snakes, and got thrown off massive mountains and forced to stay in the bottom of oceans and fed deadly poison. He was only 5 years old. And we're supposed to be like that. Mahajano yena katasa panta. I cannot imitate the Mahajans, but we follow in their footsteps according to our little way. You know, it's like a little baby sees the mother running around the kitchen and sees the father running to work, and the baby starts to learn how to walk by seeing the parents walking. The baby can't imitate the parents, but tries to follow in footsteps and we cannot imitate great souls. We can never become them in one sense. We should never think that way. But the Lord teaches the world through his devotees. Prabhupada makes the quotation. He says it's a Bengali saying that the mother teaches the daughter-in-law by chastising the daughter. Because the daughter-in-law kind of doesn't understand the new family. Traditionally in Bengal, the daughter-in-law comes to live with her husband's family, which is quite a culture shock. And the mother wants to teach her, but wants to teach her in a way that she understands the lessons, you know, in a way that is effective. So she teaches the daughter, who actually already knows everything, just so that the daughter-in-law will see and learn. So similarly, the Supreme Personality of Godhead teaches the world through his love and devotees. Presents his message in that way. And here we're discussing how the Lord has many forms, many expansions, and they're all eternal. Krishna's true Bhagavan Swayam. Krishna is the fountain, like the source of all rasas, the complete whole of the deepest. He provides, facilitates the deepest, most spontaneous loving affection with his devotees. So Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu especially came to give to the world Radha's love for Krishna, that spirit. One of his devotees was Murari Gupta. Very close, intimate, loving associate. There are so many beautiful stories of Murari Gupta's devotion. There are hearing in Mahaprakash Lila, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu called Murari Gupta. Murari Gupta was older than Lord Chaitanya, and he was a great scholar, and he was an incredible Ayurvedic doctor. And when, before Lord Chaitanya manifested his Lila as the supreme person, as the greatest of all devotees, establishing the Sankirtan movement, he was playing the role of Nimai Pandit, where he would love to debate people on grammatical mysteries. Devotees were not interested in grammatical mysteries. They just wanted to talk about Krishna. And Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, he would challenge them to arguments on different scriptural technicalities, which apparently had nothing to do with Krishna. But the Lord was, even though they didn't know who he was their worshipable Krishna himself. They were standing face to face with him. They were talking to him. They just wanted to remember Krishna. And he was forcing them to have to defend arguments that apparently had nothing to do with Krishna. But actually, they were absorbed in thinking of Lord Chaitanya, who is Krishna. And not only that, he was giving them a sense of vipralamba, of separation, because as they were talking about all these other things, they were just yearning and yearning and yearning to think about Krishna. So he was making them thoroughly Krishna conscious in a very, very transcendentally mysterious way. Studying these scriptures. You're a doctor. Your dharma is you should be studying about roots and bark and all sorts of herbs to make medicine and leaves and weeds. Couldn't tolerate being with him, couldn't tolerate being without him. So there are so many stories like this. But during the Mahaprakash Lila, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu revealed himself. He called Murari Gupta and says, this was the day that Lord Chaitanya sat on the throne of Vishnu in the house of Srivas. And he said, Murari, look at me. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu had a beautiful gold. He had a form like the Dharva grass. An incredible, effulgent greenish form. Beautiful lotus-like eyes. He was holding a bow, a golden bow and a quiver. He saw his worshipable Isthadev, the Lord of his life, Sri Ram. And Lord Chaitanya said, look at me, Murari, and look next to me. Here is Lakshman. Don't you remember? Don't you remember how when Lakshman was wounded in the battle of Sri Lanka, how you jumped all the way to the Himalayas and picked up the Gandhamadana mountain and brought it back to save his life? Don't you remember the distress you felt when you saw him laying there on the ground? And look on my other side. It is Sita. Don't you remember when you jumped across the ocean to find her and in the Ashoka groves when you saw her being harassed by Ravana, how you shed a shoreless, bottomless ocean of tears and sympathy for her? Don't you remember, Murari Gupta? You are Hanuman. Murari Gupta forgot. The Lord's Yogamaya potency.
He was Hanuman who descended from the spiritual world of Ayodhya to help Lord Chaitanya in his mission.
But he was not remembering. Murari Gupta was seeing Ram, Lakshman, Sita. Then he looked down and he saw he had a tail. and fell unconscious. And he brought him back to consciousness. He said, I want to offer you any benediction, whatever you like. Anything, but I want to give you something, the Lord said. So if you must give me something, just give me this boon, that in every birth I take, I will be in the company of your devotees. Those people who consider you their master and consider themselves your servant with no ulterior motives. Whatever birth I take, it doesn't matter. Whether it's a dog, whether it's an insect, just let me be in the company of your devotees, and with them, let me forever serve you and chant your holy name.
Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare.
This was their relationship. And later on, Lord Chaitanya tells him, a story about Maharani. He said, anyone who considers Maharani Gupta just to be an ordinary grihastha, householder with family, anyone who considers Maharani Gupta just to be an ordinary doctor, because apparently that's what he is, he never claimed to be anything else, he said they are in total illusion. His name, Murari Gupta. Gupta means secret, hidden. He's so humble. He appears to be such an ordinary person to the public. He doesn't want any recognition. He keeps Murari Krishna hidden in his heart. But the Lord exposed it. As he exposed the love of Kolavecha, Sridhar, and so many others, he exposed the true identity of Murari Gupta. One time the Lord was explaining to his devotees, he told Murari Gupta that you are a devotee of Ram, but all the rest of us were devotees of Krishna. You should worship Krishna with us. Yes, Ram is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Ram is the absolute truth. There is no difference between Ram and Krishna, but still, the lilas of Krishna are so full of sweetness and intimacy and conjugal love. So worship Krishna with us, chant Krishna's names with us. Murari Gupta, his life, his soul, his everything was only to please Lord Chaitanya. The next morning, Murari Gupta came before Lord Gauranga and asked his permission. I want to end my life. Coming from your close associate, he's speaking with tears in his eyes, he's trembling. Please, my Lord, give me your blessings that I may end my life. Why do you want to end your life? And Lord Gupta said, you are my worshipable guru, you are everything to me. My life is to please you. I want to please you. And you order me to focus on the names of Krishna and the lilas of Krishna, give my heart to Krishna, and I tried with all my powers last night. But whenever I chanted the name of Krishna, the only thing that happened is Ram appeared in my heart, and Ram appeared in my mind, and I tried to go to sleep, and I was thinking, how can I ever abandon Ram? How could I ever think of anything or anyone else but my Ram? I can't do it. If I can't execute your wish, then my life is useless. I don't want to live. I've given my head, I've given my heart to Ram, and I cannot take it back, and I cannot give it anywhere else. Lord Chaitanya became so happy. He smiled. He celebrated. He said, just see the chastity and faithfulness of your love for Shiva. And that you are Hanuman. He said, I only told you to do this just to test your love. Just to show the world the nature of the chastity of your love. And the Lord Chaitanya gave a very beautiful analogy. He said, blessed is that devotee who never leaves the faithful worship of his Lord. And blessed is that Lord who, if the devotee does try to do it, he drags him back by the hair. He said, I have staged this pastime just to show the world the glory of your love for us. And Chaitanya was completely happy. And through this beautiful lila, he explained the broad-mindedness of the path of bhakti in that sense. Most of us would not like to see Hanuman dressed like a cowherd boy. It's not his nature. He's eternally Ram's servant. He's the perfect manifestation of the highest example of Dasya Ras according to the nine processes of devotional service. And even when Krishna appeared in this world, during one of his most famous leelas, the Parthasarathi, Arjuna's chariot driver in Kurukshetra, by Krishna's own arrangement, he had his beloved devotee Hanuman on the flag over the chariot. He wanted Hanuman, he knew Hanuman wanted to be a part of this battle. And he also wanted to be a son. Hanuman wanted to associate with his Lord, and the Lord wanted to associate with his devotee. And according to Mahabharata, sometimes in the fight, Hanuman from the flag would roar to scare all the Kurus. Very transcendental. Yes. And sometimes it describes Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu when he was living in Puri during the Chaturmasya. Devotees would come and they would celebrate Ratha Yatra, but they would also celebrate so many other festivals. And it describes that sometimes they perform the pastimes of Sri Ram. And Lord Chaitanya's devotees would play the roles of Ram and Hanuman and do so many leelas. Just to absorb and remember the leelas. And Nityananda Prabhu, of all of the childhood pastimes that he would perform with his friends in Eka Chakra when he was a small boy. Perhaps the most famous pastime is when he took the role of Lakshman, Ram's brother, his eternal identity. He was fighting Ravana. And he would actually, he was the director, the producer, the scriptwriter, and the main actor. He would help design the dresses. He was really absorbed in these dramas. They were serious. On one level, they were children playing. But on another level, it was total absorption. And he had all his little friends absolutely absorbed in the leaves. Bhakti is about absorption. That focus where our aim is one, to be absorbed in Krishna. When we're chanting his name, when we're worshipping the deities, when we're hearing Srimad Bhagavatam class, when we're doing our seva, to be absorbed in that focus of one-pointedness. Please, Krishna, to remember
friends was by Ravana. When I challenge you, you throw this this great javelin at me in the form of a flower. Yes. Ravana threw his most formidable javelin that was endowed with the powers of the devas into Lakshmana's chest. But this little boy, he took a very soft, fragrant, sweet little flower. And Nityananda's Lakshmana said, "Ravana, you are a dog, you are a rascal, you have stolen Sita, you deserve to die with my hands." Ravana said, "Well, now you will face death for me. You will blame all. You took this flower. Do it." And Nityananda hit him on the chest. Nityananda fell unconscious. There was no heartbeat. There was no breath. There was no pulse. Purity was dead. And the children, beside themselves in grief, they started crying, and soon the parents heard the crying, and all the parents of Ekachakra came, and Adai Pandit, and Padmavati, Nityananda's mother and father came running to the scene, and they see little Nitai. He's only about 9 or 10 years old, and playing there, lifeless. What happened? They were trying to revive him, but nothing worked. They were beside themselves with grief because everyone in Ekachakra loved Nityananda more than their own children, more than their property, more than their life. When the Lord wants to make something exciting, he's the connoisseur of the highest process of different emotions that he brings out, and our attachment for him. So then one little boy said, "Oh, don't you remember? He said if, when he falls unconscious after the flower hits him, Hanuman should get the herb from the Gandhamadana mountain." And all the boys said, "Yes, yes, we forgot all about that. That's what he said, that's what he said." And the little boy who played Hanuman, he went running to find a Gandhamadana mountain. Ekachakra, there's no mountains. He had some stone or something, whatever. "This is the Gandhamadana mountain. I will come." And then one little boy played a crocodile and said, "No, I will attack you. You can't get by me without being attacked." And he fought him and he killed him without killing him. And there were yakshas who were trying to elude Hanuman and tempt him and divert him from his mission by offering him different types of pleasures and prestige. And he said, "Oh, no, I will not do it." And he attacked him. He killed him without killing him, and he came back with the Gandhamadana mountain, or whatever that little mountain symbol was, and put it near Nityananda's nose, and Nityananda smiled. So they were absorbed in Ram Lila. So Srila Prabhupada explains in this beautiful purport, this is such an important thing. When the Lord incarnates in this world, these incarnations are not just temporary manifestation of a supreme formless existence. These incarnations are eternal forms of the Lord in the spiritual realm, in the parayoma beyond material existence. And the Lord is attracting us into his eternal pastimes. And the path of pure bhakti recognizes this and receives accordingly. Tomorrow is Ram Navami. So we'll speak something about Lord Sri Ram today and tomorrow. Valmiki Muni, he wrote the entire Ramayana before Ram even appeared, performed his pastime. Because the Lord endowed within him the Leelas in his heart. We know the story how Valmiki Muni was a robber, a
interesting how the Supreme Lord staged Valmiki to reveal the Leela of Ram through the foundational example of the power of the holy name. Because he was killing. He was ruthless. He was heartless. And Narada Muni happened to come to him and revealed to him all the terrible karma that he was going to have to face for all the pain he caused others. Because it is the nature of the world, these laws of karma, you can't get away with anything. For every action, there will be a reaction. Any word, any action that you have ever done that is immoral or painful to others, you have to suffer. Sarva dharmam parityaja mamekam sharanam prajaja. Aham tvam sarva papevam moksha visanivasaja. But if we honestly and sincerely surrender to Krishna, Krishna delivers us from all sinful reactions. Jagaya Madhai, how sinful were they? They were not different than Ravana and Kumbhakarna, Hiranyakashipu and Hiranyaksha. And they committed even more sins, practically, as Jagayamata. But when they honestly and sincerely accepted the name of Krishna and gave up their sinful activities and accepted the role of the servant of the servant of the servant, Lord Chaitanya explained that the vast mountain range of their sins, which was in nobody could calculate. He said they were reduced to the size of a little mustard seed and then thrown in the ocean so nobody will ever see it. Whoever we are, that's the power of Krishna's forgiveness. That's the power of Sharanagati, sincere surrender. Especially surrender to the name of God. So Narada Muni told, you chant the name of Ram. But he was so sinful he could not say the name of Ram. Now we're pretty sinful, but still we can say the name of Ram. Can you imagine? He could not say it. His mouth could not, he didn't have the karma to even pronounce the two syllables wrong. So Narada Muni was really a good preacher. He knew according to time, place, and circumstance how to somehow or other connect somebody. So he said, well, you're a killer. You're really attracted to death. So chant the name of death, Mara. And that, with great enthusiasm, he was able to do. He said, just keep chanting over and over again the name of the Lord of death, sorrow, Mara. So Valmiki Muni says, to please Narada Muni, understand there was that seed of devotion of an awakening in his heart. Narada Muni was such a loving, he respected Valmiki despite his atrocious life. Because he saw Pandita-samadarshana. He saw he's a brother, he's a part of Krishna. He saw beyond, beneath his illusion, his maya, his sinfulness, his selfishness, his exploitativeness. He saw something good in there. That's how Srila Prabhupada started on Wimmer. He saw people who were kind of like little Valmikis. He saw their potential. And somehow or other gave them prasad and gave them a name and understood if they just do this, they will be transformed. And this is the nature of a great soul. They see the innate spiritual potential in everyone. And somehow or other, we try to fan that little spark that's there of devotion, of love. So he wanted to please Narada Muni. So he wanted to start chanting Mara, 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 Mara. Narada Muni tricked him. He's totally absorbed in chanting Mara, 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 Mara. And without knowing it, he was chanting the name of Ram. And he became verified. He became a Paramahamsa, Mahabhagavat. And then through the agency of Brahma and then the will of Ram, all the leelas of Ram were manifested to him when he wrote the Ramayana. But therein he describes the kingdom of Ayodhya. Beautiful, beautiful place with palaces made out of ivory and marble, onyx, gold, and silver. There is no place as that. Not even Buckingham Palace. I hate to say that. Actually, I'm happy to say that. We have some beautiful buildings in the world today, no doubt. But we cannot imagine. This is Treta Yuga, a previous age. And people like Vishwakarma were coming to be the architects. It was the most splendid kingdom. And all the citizens loved their leader, Dasara. That's a culture shock in Kali Yuga. I even have to go out and do campaign speeches to raise funds for the next election. You need alliances of other parties that don't like you to somehow or other come together just to form, you know, a leader who they hate less than you, more than you. He was the king, he was the monarch, and everybody loved him. He had complete power. He was so humble. He would always consult the ministers and the Brahmins and the gurus and the sages. Everything was just perfect. He had conquered all the directions required. All the citizens loved him and his wives like they loved their own father and mother. Everyone was obedient. There was practically no crime because everyone was satisfied. He was in good health. Everything was just right. But there was one problem. He didn't have a son. Previously he had one daughter, Shanta. She married Rishyashoda in the kingdom of Anga. According to the tradition, it was his duty to God and his forefathers to have a son who would be the next king. But he didn't have it. This is how noble and responsible he was. He wasn't thinking about himself. I'm going to live and die with all this opulence and all this love and all this power and all this respect. But he was thinking not in terms of him. Because in those days, you know, a great devotee, whatever position they're in, they're the servant of the servant of the servant. Akinchana Gochana, nothing is mine. Everything belongs to God. And as a leader, everything that God entrusts me with is in the service of others. What will happen to the kingdom if there's not a qualified person to follow after me? It's the Lord's arrangement that this dynasty continued in pure devotion. So he was feeling, although for himself, he had everything perfectly. He was in tremendous distress because he wasn't serving his forefathers, his citizens, or God appropriately in his own mind. And he addressed the ministers, the Brahmins, that I was, what am I going to do? I have no son. So his guru, Vasishtha Muni, reminded him that Sanat Kumar, that great rishi and sage, he said, he told us that you're going to have four sons, that you should do a yajna, a special sacrifice, and bring Rishyashringa from Anga to be the priest. So Dasarath Maharaj, with the blessings and the permission of Allah, he began the preparations of this yajna. He had a horse with about 400 of his best generals following, and they traveled around the whole world to get all the other kingdoms to accept Dasarath's position as the ruler of rulers. They got all the blessings. And they made Dasarath Maharaj, when everybody came back, they were arranging beautiful place for the yajna to happen. As far as we read from the Ramayana, it was probably much more opulent than this stadium that your London has created for the Olympics. This is coming July and August, I think, yes. Well, he also constructed for this very, very special event. And he wanted to make sure there were beautiful residences for all the kings and guests. Then he invited them. Everyone came together. And King Dasarath is a humble servant of everyone. Under the guidance of his Guru Vasishtha, he told all of his people, every single guest that comes, you should give them anything and everything they want. Make them totally satisfied. Even if they're abusive, even if they're harsh, do not become angry. Just make them happy. Yes. Hospitality from the Vedic style is something very, very sacred and deep. Srila Prabhupada explains that a guest comes to your home, even if that person is your arch enemy, you should give him such hospitality that he forgets you're his enemy. That's hospitality. Or to speak of a friend. And Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, when he was teaching people about the Grihastha life, this was one of his primary emphasis, hospitality. How you treat an uninvited guest is very much how you treat God. Dasarath Maharaj is such a culture. It wasn't that he wanted these people to come so he could show off his prowess and subdue them, because that doesn't bring about blessing. He wanted to serve them and satisfy so much that all these people would bless him. And that's just what he wanted. We perform this yajna for many days. And on the last day, they were performing the last rituals with very qualified devotees and Brahmins performing from their hearts. And at that time, the devas appeared. Not everyone saw them, but they appeared. And they spoke to Lord Brahma. They said to Brahma, we are in so much turmoil, not only the earth, but the universe, because of this Ravana. Ravana literally means one who makes people cry. nice tears. Miserable tears. He and his people, they would rape your wives, they would kill your husbands, they would kill and eat your children, they would destroy any sense of goodness. Especially, they were rakshasas. But the special delicacy was sages and rishis and brahmanas. They were very demonic and very powerful. Brahmana was a Brahmin who misused his Brahmin powers to get supernatural. And he had benedictions of Brahma that made him practically infallible. So when Devas approached Brahma, you gave him these benedictions and now he's creating chaos. He's a massive terrorist. I mean, if you've seen chaos the world is in because of some little tiny insect-like terrorist crawling around. Well, Ravana, he was a real terrorist. He had such an incredible mystic powers. He could change his form any way he wanted. He had massive armies of mystic yogis who were demons. Hare Krishna. And the devas could not stand before him. So they prayed to Brahma, help us, help us. This is the time. So Brahma and Krishna and Vishnu appeared. I'm Ganga. And Brahma said, my lord, we need your help. And I gave these benedictions to Ravana, and now nobody can stand before him. And I cannot take them away either. It's not my dharma. But you see, great souls like Brahma, they see even in the worst condition, there is the opportunity for incredible blessings. That my Lord, he has a benediction for me, that he could not be killed by any deva or any dharma or any city of, but he specifically, out of his false pride, he didn't ask for the benediction of not being killed by a human. Because humans to these rakshasas are like ants. How does it look if you go to a, you know, do tapasya for 10,000 years and everybody's watching and you know it's going to be in the scriptures and all that stuff? And you're so mighty and you're so powerful and you say, I want the benediction that I will never be killed by an ant. You lose your credibility. You lose your prestige. Now, you may see a mosquito, because a mosquito may have malaria and all that. Ants don't have malaria. Ants don't spread diseases. You know, even if they bite you, it's just like... tolerate it. Yes? So for the rakshasas, a human is like an ant. They're totally insignificant. So just to preserve his prestige, he didn't even ask for that. And he didn't care about it. So Brahma asked Vishnu, please, Dasarat, he wants a son. Come yourself in a human form, playing the role of a human being, as his son, and liberate the world from the tyranny of Ravana. This is very interesting, because you see the devas, however, they were so powerful and so wealthy and so knowledgeable, and they had such incredible karma, but they did not approach the Lord directly. They approached through their guru, through Brahma. And Brahma offered the prayers for them. When we do deity worship, the Brahma Sanatana Goswami and our acharyas Gopal Bhatta Goswami have taught us is first we do a little puja to the Guru. That it is only by your blessings, it's only by your permission, it's only because we're doing it on your behalf that Krishna is going to hear us and accept what we're doing. And that's a very important part of our puja. We first get the blessings and make the resolve that I'm doing this on your behalf. And then we know for sure that Krishna must accept the offerings of Srila Prabhupada. And if he blesses us to make the offerings, and we're offering his offerings, then Krishna will accept. That's our qualification. It's not the qualification that I can decorate Radharani's hair better than anyone else in the temple. Or I know how to put this necklace on in such a way that nobody else could do. I can cook preparations that people will be jealous of how I do it. That's not our qualification. It's not the material quality. We have to do the best we can, as creative and as artistic and as pleasing as we can. That's part of devotion. But we always understand that Krishna's not accepting it because of me. He's accepting it because of Srila Prabhupada and the great souls. I do it on their behalf. When we preach, when we do deity worship, whatever we do, we know if we're doing it in that spirit, taking the blessings, doing it on behalf of the great souls, then Krishna will accept. And what is our little position? That's the way the devas, the demigods, are approaching the Lord, Brahma. And Brahma is presenting the hearts of the devas to Vishnu and begging him, pleading with him, praying to him, please descend into this world, show your wonderful pastimes, be the son of Dasarath Maharaj, and slay Ravana for everyone's benefit. Ravana was very compassionate, because Ravana was his devotee in one sense. He wanted him liberated. And Vishnu agreed that he would descend with his three expansions, who were like his three weapons, his symbols. They would all appear together as the sons of Dasarath. And Vishnu told the demigods that in this mission, I want you to participate. He told the demigods through Brahma that all of you should not leave your heavenly posts, but you should expand yourself in forms of monkeys, celestial, divine monkeys who have all the same knowledge and power as you have. The Lord, how wonderful, so powerful. Aishwaryasya samakrasya viryasya yashasya. Source of all power and all strength. And yet, he wants to include his devotees in this thing. So Lord Ramchandra invited the devas to come in the form of celestial monkeys. And then he blessed everyone and disappeared. After this, the final oblation was made by Rishi Shringa, Rishi Shrimuni, and the great sages. After days and days and days and months of preparation, they chanted that last mantra and offered the oblation to the sacred fire with so much love and so much prayer. And from the fire, this incredible golden person. personality was holding a pot made out of pure gold. Inside that pot was divine piousness. It was nectar. It was celestial nectar beyond. And that personality, when Dasarath Maharaj and others saw him, with folded hands they bowed down and honored him and worshipped him. And that celestial personality put the golden pot in the hands of Dasarath. And Dasarath was told, distribute this among your wives, and from this they will become pregnant, and the Supreme Lord will appear as your sons. Dasarath Maharaj, it was the fulfillment of everything. His one wish in life was going to be fulfilled in such a special way. His eyes were tearing with gratitude as he circumambulated this personality several times with folded hands. And then that person entered back into the fire and disappeared. Dasarath Maharaj had three wives, Kausalya, Kaikeyi, and Sumitra. He divided this nectar to Kausalya and Kaikeyi, and each of them gave a portion of theirs to Sumitra. They drank it. Can't even imagine what that must have tasted like. And the potency to make God your son. When we read about these things, we should actually not just what's next, we should actually really try to go deep into the experience of what that must have tasted like, what it must have felt like, the joy of Ayodhya at that time. And immediately after they drank it, they became pregnant. And all the three mothers, they radiated such spiritual beauty because they became the abode of the Lord. The Lord was manifesting within them. Dasarath Maharaj. And you see, in those days, because everyone loved Dasarath Maharaj, because he loved everyone so much, no one was envious. Everyone was joyful. This is culture and society. When Dasarath was suffering because he had no child, everyone in Ayodhya was suffering. When he was happy because he was having a child, everyone in Ayodhya was rejoicing. Tomorrow we are celebrating that moment. When from Kausalya, the senior most wife of Dasarath, from her heart, from her womb, emerged Ramchandra, the Supreme Personality of God. He was the baby who was so absolutely beautiful. He enchanted the hearts of everyone. Everyone in Ayodhya fell in love with this baby to such a degree they loved him more than they loved their children, their lives, their wealth, more than everything. To please this child is the only goal of everyone. That's how he attracted their mind. And Kaikeyi gave birth to Bharat, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, in an expansion. And Sarika, because she took two shares of that nectar, she gave birth to two sons, Lakshman and Shatrughna. What a festival, the birthday of Ram Navami. Even today, so, two yugas later, so many millions of years later, we are still celebrating. Millions and millions of people all over the world are celebrating this Ram Navami. Celebrations, what festivities, how many people are flooding to that place to celebrate Ram's birth. What to speak of Ayodhya. Millions come there for this day. And temples all over India, and by Prabhupada's grace, all over the world, Ram Navami is being celebrated. Can you imagine the original celebration? Dasarath Maharaj and Kausalya and Vasishtha Muni, they personally organized for this celebration. And in those days, the celebration of a birthday was to get blessings for the child. But everyone would come and just shower their heartfelt blessings upon the child. And Ram was so beautiful. He was so sweet. He was so charming. He was so attractive that nobody could think of him as God. They just loved him as a child. Kausalya, he was her baby. Dasarath, they knew he was God ultimately because they had that theoretical information was told to them. But they couldn't conceive of him that way. And little Ramachandra learned how to walk. Kausalya, Kakeyi, Sumitra, and Dasarath Maharaj, they saw these four dynamic expansions of Bhagavan, the Supreme Lord. They watched as he learned how to talk. He didn't just start speaking Gita. He was speaking mama. Not necessarily exactly. But he was just learning to talk like a human. Oh, how beautiful it was. They loved him as God without understanding he was God. That parental affection there, Vatsalya Ras, was eclipsed his supremacy. Soon, Ram, Lakshman, Bharat, and Shatrughna became students, and they were trained to be the next royal monarchs. And they were trained in the scriptures, and the military sciences, and the culture of every aspect to make one person a leader and a protector of the society, and a devotee of God. He was God himself being taught to offer everything he had to Vishnu. And he was so happy to do it. In that call. It describes when he was about 16 years old. He was just completing certain levels of his education. Dasarath was speaking to Kausalya, then I think it's getting close to time when we should start arranging for our children's marriage.
most powerful sage living in the forest.
And he said to some of the guards there, tell Dasarath Maharaj that the son of Gadhi, Vishwamitra, has arrived. When Dasarath got that news, he rejoiced. A sage, a rishi, a great, great devotee of the Lord has come. He gave such a royal, special welcome to Vishwamitra. Dasarath is dressed like an emperor, and Vishwamitra is wearing a deer skin, barefoot, matted hair. He comes into the assembly. Dasarath Maharaj puts him on his own throne. He washes his feet. He offers him garlands. He offers him everything. He said, I am your servant. I am your obedient servant. Tell me anything you want. I will fulfill any desire you have. You have come to bless our kingdom. You are a Brahmin. You are a sage. I am just a king. I may have some physical power as a king, but you have all the power of God as a great sage. I'm your servant. Tell me, how can I serve you? Anything, everything. My life, my kingdom, my everything is your property. You are a representative of God. How may I serve you? Vishwamitra Muni looked at him very seriously and said, do you vow that you will do anything I say? Dasarath said, of course, anything, everything, whatever is mine is yours. He said, in the name of Ram, my beloved son, who is more dear to me than my life, who I cannot live a moment without, I vow in his name that I will give you anything you want. Vishwamitra Muni said, you promise? Was reconfirmed. He said, I am living in the forest with other great rishis and my students. We are performing a yajna, a holy sacrifice for the welfare of the whole world. And this yajna takes many days. But whenever we are just at the culmination of it, two Rakshasas, Asuras, named Subahu and Maricha, they come and devastate everything. They are so powerful they could change their form in any way they want. They are terrible monsters. And just at the verge of the culmination of our offering to the Lord, they create storms. They pour down flesh and blood, excrement. They terrorize everyone. And there's nothing that we can do. It's interesting. They were performing this yajna for the welfare of others in such impediments. In this age of Kali, there's one yajna that has more power and includes all others. Yajnai sankirtana priyaya vijantehi shumetasha. The yajna of sankirtan. Congregational chanting of the holy name. And you see how there are so many impediments that may come. Impediments from without, impediments from within ourselves, impediments from within our own society of devotees, impediments from antagonistic people outside, impediments from the temptations of Maya. So many impediments are there. Trying to somehow pollute the purity of our yajna. Vishwamitra Muni understood Ram was God, and he understood that he could give shelter. And in the same way, we have to pray for that shelter. So he explained,
Subahu and Richa made the details of their atrocities. He said they are so powerful. I want you to give me your son Ram to fight against them. Dasarath was not expecting that. It was like a blazing shaft in a barrel to court to take away Ram. He said, I cannot live without seeing him, even for a few minutes. What to speak of his mother and the rest of the people of Ionia? You're taking him away. He's just a boy. He hasn't even completed his education and military sciences. He's only 16 years old. He's my son. He needs me. He needs his mother to fight against these dangerous, monstrous Rakshasas. It's impossible. I cannot do it. I'm sorry. If you let your money that you have given your word, Dasarath said, let Ram stay home. I will personally take the incredible, massive armies of Ayodhya to your ashram to fight against these asuras. Tell me something about these asuras. He said, they are the associates of Ravana. When Dasarath heard the name Ravana, everything became totally hopeless. He said, Ravana's terrorizing and abusing everything. And his two lieutenants, Subahu and Maricha, who are empowered with his type of prowess, they are coming on his behalf. And Dasarath said, Ravana, even the Devas are afraid of him. Myself and all my armies cannot stand before him. There's nothing we can do. What to speak of little Ram? I can't give him to you. Vishwamitra manifested yogic anger. His eyes became like hot coals as he was gazing upon Dasarath. And with a very thunderous voice, he said, you have given your word to a sage. If you take it back now, your entire dynasty will be destroyed. You will bring infamy to all of your forefathers. No one has ever told a lie in your dynasty. Such shame will be upon you and your whole race. Yes, I will leave here without Ram, but this will be the reaction. Total devastation. Dasarath was really torn. Giving his little son to fight against massive demons or total disgrace to his whole dynasty. At this point, Vashishtha Muni, his guru, stepped between them. Took Dasarath aside. He said, I know Vishwamitra Muni. I've had my experience. I told him a little of the history. He said, Vishwamitra Muni is so powerful. He himself was a great king who became a Maharishi. He has the power to kill Maricha and Subahu himself. But the nature of the yajna, he's already told us that if he in any way, as the leading guru of the yajna, if he in any way manifests any symptom of anger, everything's finished. And he can't fight against these people without getting angry. He will protect Ram. I promise you, I guarantee this, Vashishtha said. He will empower, he will give celestial weapons and mantras to Ram that nobody has ever seen. You have nothing to fear. Dasarath had faith in the words of his guru. This is really faith. When you really put on the line of what is most dear to your whole life, watchman would never allow Ram to go without him. From birth, Lakshman was 24 hours a day practically serving Ram. And Sutrugna was 24 hours a day serving Bharat. That was their only joy in life, is just to assist their elder brothers. Kausalya, Sumitra, they watched as Dasarath Maharaj entrusted his sons to go to the forest to fight these demons with the Sumitra woman. And Dasarath told Ram, he said, serve this great sage the same way you serve me, with full heart of love and devotion. And come back soon. Vishwamitra Muni was very happy. They departed from Ayodhya. As they departed, they were roaming through the forest. Ram exhibited the perfect example of every type of relationship. Whether one is a son, husband, or a brother, or a friend, or a leader, or a disciple, Ram manifested through his example the perfect example of how we should behave. And interestingly, if we study Ram's Leela, every one of these examples and all of his relationships were based on selfless service. He accepted Vishwamitra Muni as his guru. As they were living in the forest, he would collect wood to make fires to keep his guru warm. He would go out and collect herbs and roots to provide his guru food. He would get water from a lake or a river to bring to his guru for washing. He would sit down and massage the legs and the feet of his guru with such humble devotion, just to please him. And most of all, Tadviti Pranipatina Pariprasvena Seva. He served his guru from his heart of hearts. Everything, every moment was to please his guru. When he was living in the forest, and Lakshmi was assisting him. And he would love every evening when they would be sitting down after walking many miles and serving his guru and satisfying him in every way, physically, emotionally. He would inquire from his guru and tell him stories. He would ask all about the philosophy of life, the history of great sages. In one forest, Vishwamitra Muni told him there was a demoness named Tathaka. And he was asking all about what is the history of this forest and why does this forest look so dark and creepy and strange? And who is this Tathaka you're talking about? Why is she like this? And Vishwamitra Muni told him the whole history, and he's with so many philosophical reports and so many commentaries and so much wisdom. They sat on the banks of the Ganga, and Ram asked, please tell me the history of Mother Ganga and how she descended to this earth. Vishwamitra Muni, for many, many hours and hours and hours, was explaining in great detail the history of the Ganges River, how she appeared within the universe, how she appeared in the earth planet. And Ram and Lakshman, in rapt attention, were hearing, oral reception, shravana. They were so eager. In this way, Ram was teaching. So
servant, servant, servant. How even the Supreme Absolute Truth, the controller of all controllers, the master of all masters, takes the greatest happiness in hearing from his devotee, in serving, menial services for his devotee. He was meant to be the next king, but he was massaging feet, collecting water, making little beds out of leaves. And I was in great joy, such a simple life. And ultimately, they came to the Siddhashram, the ashram of Vishwamitra. And all the great rishis and students and brahmacharis and sadhus and yogis who were there, they stood up to receive their guru, Vishwamitra. And they saw these two magnificent, beautiful princes with them. The sons of Dasarath, Rama and Lakshman. Surely he will deliver us from these rakshasas. Vishwamitra Muni arranged for the yajna to begin. This time, they had confidence that it would be successful. For the welfare of humanity, for the welfare of creation, they were not doing it for themselves. Even though it was spoiled again and again and again, it was extremely dangerous to defy people like Maricha and Subhan. But for the sake of the world, for the welfare and the purity of the planet, Dharma, they were willing to risk everything and undergo the most incredible difficulties standing against these people. It was based on one principle, compassion. It was their compassion to all beings that they were willing to take these risks and go through again and again failures, seeking success. For us, this is the quality of a great soul. Willing to go through great difficulties for the welfare of others. The Prabhupada started his temple in Jhansi, the ashram of the League of Devotees. For the world, his guru gave him that order. Take Lord Chaitanya's teachings for the whole world. It's the greatest need, Krishna God. And it was taken away from him. A year of yajna, of working so hard, investing all of his life, and it was all just taken away in a moment. Then he went to Vrindavan and prepared and prepared and prepared. He went on the Jalantuta, 38 days, heart attack, seasickness, so many difficulties. He wasn't doing it for himself. He was living at the Seva Kunj, the place of the Ras Lila, in the temple of Jiva Goswami, at the Samadhi of Rupa Goswami, in Sri Vrindavan Dham. And he ends up in Butker, Pennsylvania. Can you imagine leaving Vrindavan to go to Butker, Pennsylvania? He went from living in Jiva Goswami, in Jiva Goswami's temple in the place of the Ras Lila, to live in the YMCA. The Young Men's Christian Association. And the YMCA is for really, really poor, down-and-out people. It's not that you ask your travel agent for a vacation in the YMCA. These people really have nothing. It's like a charitable place. Yes? I don't know how it is in England, but that's the way it is. And it was at Sally and Gopal Agarwal's house. The refrigerator was filled with meat. He was accustomed to cooking vegetables and grains growing in the sacred soils of Brajbhumi. And offering him to Radha Damodar. And here he's cooking in this kitchen where there's all dead cows in the refrigerator. And Sally would cook for her husband. And it would all smell and everything. And you know what Prabhupada did? He cooked such excellent prasad for everybody that they didn't have to cook. Sally, I don't know how to tell this. Prabhupada never chastised. He was a guest in their house. He couldn't say, this is Maya for every hair on the body of the cow. And suffer in hell and slaughter and bloodshed. He didn't tell them that. He was their guest. If he told them that, they would have probably, you know, either cried or kicked him out. He was so excellent. He took the philosophy, packaged it in such a practical way. How did he get them to give up eating meat when he was there? By a positive alternative. By cooking such wonderful rotis and sabjis and dal and halava and laddus and gulab jamuns. He would cook a little feast for them every day for the whole family. And they just loved his cooking so much. It was so flavorful and so full of devotion. And he served it with such affection. She said, the whole time Swamiji was at my house, I was a pure vegetarian because he cooked all our meals. And we didn't want anything else. Parandrasvami, our today. She found something higher, the lower things are not. Prabhupada gives that example. If somebody's eating stool, and you give them halava. They're not interested in stool anymore. Except the hog. I said, if you give us hog, however, he will say, give me stool. For most people. I don't think it's fine. But what difficulties Prabhupada went through. Then he went to New York. And he was robbed, and he had strokes, and people tried to kill him, and he was being threatened, and he was poor, and he was cold, and there was snow, and he thought everything was painted white. So many difficulties for us, just to get us to chant Hare Krishna and be happy. He was already chanting Hare Krishna, and was in ecstasy for us. So this is the nature of great souls, and this would be these sages. They were performing this yajna because in those days this was the yuga dharma. And on the final day, when everything was going to culminate, massive black clouds formed in the sky. Even though it was daytime, it became like pitch dark. Lightning. And then he heard this hideous screaming. Subahu and Mamicha. And they had a whole host, a whole army of other Rakshasas with them. They were screaming and growling and roaring. And everything became cold and windy and dark. Very, very scary situation. And all the sages, they all kind of went back. They were helpless. Then torrents of blood and flesh and carcasses started pouring down from the sky. And they started throwing weapons and all kinds of other things, and they came down they just to harass and humiliate the sages. These Rakshasas were dancing around wildly, destroying everything, making everything totally polluted. And if anybody dared to stand before them, they would be eaten alive. That was the situation. And I was so humble. But he was angry. He was seeing what these people were doing. But he didn't do anything until Vishnu Chamuni gave him blessing. Said, Ram, and Ram said to Lakshmi, watch what I do. And he took an arrow. And he pointed at Maricha, who was the most powerful among all those Rakshasas. And Ram pulled back that arrow
reached his ear. He pointed it and looked right in the eyes of Marisha. He released. It hit him right in the chest. But by Ram's transcendental mystic power, it did not kill him, but the force of that arrow made this gigantic mountain of a Rakshasa Maricha fly back 800 miles into the middle of the ocean. And Maricha is all of a sudden unconscious and he wakes up in the middle of the ocean. And from that point on, he never ever wanted to see Ram again. And all the other Rakshasas were so angry. What did they do? So they all were attacking, and Ram was going, and he was killing and scattering, and all the they were running everywhere. Either they were dying or running away. And ultimately, Subahu, he was so outraged to see that Ram was defying his prowess. He attacked Ram with all his strength. That arrow hit him at the chest and cut into pieces his heart. He vomited blood and fell to the ground dead. Nobody's like this story. Ramachandra Bhagavan ki. And then the weather became nice again. He was crying with pride and love for his beloved Ramachandra. He was so pleased. All the sages and rishis, they completed the yajna. After years of being harassed, it was done. We were all so happy. They were giving blessings to Ram. What Ram wanted from the sages, one of their blessings. And then Vishwamitramuni, the next morning, he said, I want to take you to Mithila, the kingdom of Chanak. There is a bowl. This bowl is the bowl of Shiva. It's one of the most incredible thousands of people have gone to try to lift and string that bowl. Because if anyone could do it, they could get the king's daughter seated in marriage. I want to take you to this beautiful kingdom of Mithila to see this bowl. Let us go. Vishwamitramuni walked in front, and Lakshman and Ram walked behind them. And on the way, Vishwamitramuni, he was so pleased with Ram's submissiveness, with his service attitude, with his wonderfulness. Ram offered respect and honor to everyone. Even the demons he did before he dispatched them to the ocean or to another life. Everyone's one worship. Vishwamitramuni empowered Ram with weapons that even the devas could not fathom. Vishwamitramuni had them all. And this is in Treta Yuga, how he was empowering him with weapons. It wasn't that he was just giving him the different types of artillery. He didn't need those in those days. You know, nuclear places to hide bombs and missiles to carry them. He gave them through mantras. He told Ram, this weapon of Vayu, this weapon of Indra, this weapon of Agni, this weapon of Vishnu, this weapon of Shiva. If you chant this mantra, kill the personified form and fulfill whatever you wish. And he would, these secret mantras, he would impart it to Ram, and then Ram would chant it, and the personification of these incredible, all-powerful weapons would appear with folded hands, saying, Ram, anytime you call me, we are here for you. And he gave him hundreds and hundreds of these mantras for every type of purpose. And Ram was giving all credit to Vishwamitra. And Vishwamitra Muni understood that whatever powers he had, he was getting from Ram. Such a leela of loving reciprocation. And they walked toward Mithila.